The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
And this episode, this is a review episode. We're reviewing the Lego Batman movie.
Yeah.
If you listen to these Nerdy Show episodes when they come out, like you're so in Nerdy Show that you always hit it when we release, this might surprise you that this release is several days early. Because it's a review and because we saw an early screening, we figured, what the hell? We'll put it out early. So, not releasing on Wednesday as per usual.
Yeah, what good's a review if you've already seen it?
Well, I think Wednesday they still wouldn't have seen it yet. But now you'll know in advance whether or not you want to spend money on this.
Mm-hmm.
Or how badly you do want to spend money on
it. We'll let you know more in advance.
Yeah.
There's more of a cushion there. You can decide.
So we are going to be talking about the film, of course. But we are going to pull our punches. There will be no spoilers unless, of course, we decide there should be spoilers. And if we do decide that, one, we will let you know. And two, it will be buried at the end of this. So feel free to listen to this, regardless of whether you've seen the film or not. So the Lego movie was very successful and very good. Shockingly
surprising.
Good.
Yeah, surprising. Yeah.
It really oughtn't have been as good as it was. And of course, the hallmark of the Lego movie was that not only was it a toy film, not only was it a gorgeous CGI film that was written and directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who've now gone on to, as of very recently, start filming the Han Solo film.
Mm-hmm.
It featured a ridiculous amount of characters from across multiple franchises. Anybody that Lego had done work with had a presence in this film. Even though it was a Warner Brothers animation release, there were Disney property characters in it. And so far as, you know, Star Wars, I believe there were a couple Marvel cameos. Of course, nothing as severe as the DC presence. And in the Lego Batman movie, oh, they might be selling you Batman up front. And there's a huge chunk of Batman, but this is, make no mistake, as much of a cross-property film as, well, I take that back. It is a cross-property film like the Lego movie, but it is not as much of one because this one digs exclusively into the toy chest of Warner Brothers, including the Warner Brothers music catalog because there's a weird amount of Michael Jackson in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's say this. The first 10 minutes of this film are golden.
Yeah.
A++. If they only released the first 10 minutes of this film, it would be a shoo-in for the top 20 nerdy things of the year.
Yeah. I really didn't know what to think going into it other than, okay, it's going to be similar to the Lego movie, you know, whatever. But the first 10 minutes really, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm sold. Like, no matter what happens for the rest of this movie, I'm going to sit here and watch to the end. And the rest of the film is good, but that first 10 minutes was just like, that must have been like the first thing they thought of when they were thinking of like, what's the Batman movie going to be about?
It's just, it's on.
Yeah.
The jokes, all of them pop. They cram everything in. We see this almost, basically an ensemble cast of Batman villains throughout the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's as though one of the challenges of the film is how much can you cram on screen at one time?
Mm-hmm.
And so you get truly a multiversal roster of Batman characters. Now, they don't get some of them anywhere near as much screen time as they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you're going to see Egghead from the Adam West Batman.
Yeah.
A shocking amount of Condiment King.
Yeah.
A one-off joke character from a single episode of Batman the Animated Series that's had life outside of that since then. But only as
a Polka Dot Man.
Quilt Man.
Quilt Man.
Kite Man. And then other DC figures like Orca and Catman are totally in the background.
A version of Bane that looks like he's from the animated DC animated universe, but with a voice like Tom Hardy's Bane, which is a fun mashup kind of thing.
It is. This movie is all over the place. And of course it is, because if you've seen the trailers, then you know that Robin is in this film, but not in any kind of conventional way. A needy, overeager nerd boy Robin.
It's a reinvention of Dick Grayson. It is Dick Grayson.
It is Dick
but
Grayson.
But it's not the same origin story as the normal Dick Grayson. I mean, he could have had the same origin story, but instead of being transferred directly over to Wayne Manor, he's had to stop over in the Gotham City orphanage.
He has acrobatic skills, but never once do they mention the circus.
Well, because dead parents aren't really, you know, a thing that they want to mention in a kid's film like this.
Did you forget the Batman song from the no Lego
parents.
Movie?
He just said no parents.
Oh, he said no parents?
Yeah, it's
interesting.
Darkness, no parents.
You know, in my brain, I just turned it into dead parents.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so this film, the crux of it is Batman is full of himself. We know that. That is the Will Arnett Batman character from Lego Movie. He is up his own butt with how much he loves himself. And he doesn't need nobody. Not nobody, not no how.
Not even Alfred.
But he's got this father figure that he's ignoring. He himself is like a bratty child, even though he's got mad skills. And then all of a sudden he gets this other child in his life. And on top of that, the Gotham City police force is trying to get rid of their need for Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And his dysfunctional relationship with the Joker, which is has a vague homoeroticism, bromance element to it. that's not going the way that Joker would like, let's say.
Yeah.
It's a difficult film to describe. And there's the plots all over the place in a positive way. Sampling heavily from the DC canon, like it's so Gotham centric, but at the same time has bleed over from the rest of everything else. There's cameos from the rest of the Justice League, but I guess it's probably safe to say that the Phantom Zone, which is a massive part of Superman's mythology, is a super significant part of this entire film, which is weird.
Yeah, this really was a strange movie, but overall, this is way better than Batman vs. Superman. It's like way better than Man of Steel, like all the recent DC films. This is way more up my alley, and people smile in it. You know, it's fun. It's colorful. You can have a Batman movie and make it colorful. I don't know. It was very enjoyable. If you had all liked the first Lego movie, and you like Batman. This is good.
Yeah, for diehard Batman fans, there's so many side jokes, so many nods, so many visual references to basically everything. Everything from they tap into each one of Batman's cinematic appearances prior to this, each and every single one, mm-hmm. as well as thing like brief nods to Dark Knight Returns, the animated series, etc. So It's got something for you, but also they do it. I mean, you could watch the first 10 minutes, and then you could also leave and never watch the rest of it because it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, I'd say it was a good movie. It wasn't a great movie.
Yeah.
But the first 10 minutes was what could have been a great short film, a truly great short film.
Yeah. What was it? Those DC animated shorts they put online sometimes.
Well, there was DC Nation for a while.
Yeah.
Several years ago. But, I mean, yeah, it had all the hallmarks of one of those things. It was so on. But then the story about Batman's discovery that maybe he should rely on other people and so on. And
which is a nice story to tell.
It's a nice story to tell. It's weird, right? Because Batman's, he's the main character, but he's not exactly likable. But you can like him in a passive way. But he's like kind of like a weird, hyper cool Donald Trump character. He's up his own ass. He tells himself lies all the time, and he doesn't pay taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So
he does pay taxes. That's what he said in the lyric.
No, the song is he doesn't pay taxes.
He doesn't?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what that.
I'm pretty sure the song was that he actually does because he's so cool. He does all that stuff.
I think paying taxes is cool, but I'm pretty sure I heard that he doesn't pay taxes.
Don't remember.
Hey, if you watch the film, tell us who's...
Yeah, does Bruce Wayne pay taxes or not? That's what we want to know. Pretty sure he said he did.
I mean, but, if so, A++. The movie's actually a little bit better now, but
because he does everything right. That's the thing. He does everything perfectly. That was the whole point of that little song that he was
I thought
singing.
The point of the song was, I'm such a cool guy.
But he's a billionaire, and the fact that he's a billionaire and pays his taxes and shows off, gives gift to the orphanage, I figured that's what the
I
whole
thought
thing
it was a hallmark of our time that, you know, not paying taxes is cool.
Not paying taxes will get you in jail.
Unless you're super rich.
Unless you, yeah. Hi-yo, it's true. Wake up, sheeple.
I don't know. I legit thought that's what I heard.
Could be. I don't know. Whatever. Either way, that was one lyric out of a fun song, out of an awesome beginning to a fun movie.
And I'm just bringing everybody down as per usual. Barbara Gordon is a major character. Commissioner Gordon retires, as in James Jim Gordon retires. And his daughter Barbara takes over, having cleaned up the streets of Bloodhaven with statistics.
Yeah.
And now she's coming to Gotham, and she's like, hey, you know, the classic trope of, so Batman fights all the villains, and that's great, but it's like the problem never seems to go away.
Yeah.
He hasn't actually, like, permanently
it's
apprehended
like
any of these people.
Prophecy. Yeah. Like, every time he busts someone, and then they end up escaping, or... Even, I think in this universe, they say he's never actually captured any of them.
Yeah.
He just sort of thwarts them and they get away.
Yeah.
But it's like a cartoon. That was the whole point. It was like they were living in this cartoon world.
Yeah.
And in comes Barbara Gordon being like, this can't sustain itself. You know, like kind of being the first big main voice of reason in the movie and unveils a plan to work with Batman to make permanent change.
That is actually, it's never elaborated on because ultimately Batman's ego gets in the way and he's like, well, fuck that. No.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I kind of felt the rest of the movie, I was still trying to figure out what exactly Barbara and her character in general, like, wanted out of the experience. Cause she's along for the ride and she's helping out, but also, like, you never really get the gist of what her plan was. And it's still ultimately Batman's movie and she is an accessory to that adventure.
And I feel like the whole extension of the family, it could have been done with just Robin cause there's enough there to do that. You know, like, Alfred makes a big deal out of, like, you got to go take care of this kid. He's an orphan. And not like it's a lot like an orphan I once knew and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this would be good. Like, he's going to learn, you know, dealing with Robin. It's going to be like a buddy cop movie. They're not going to get along. He's not going to like him at first. And then he's going to learn to like him. And then he's going to, you know, love him like a brother, like a son. And in that, you know, grow in his own way. And instead, it's like Robin's there, but that's not enough. They have to throw in Barbara Gordon and Alfred. I mean, Alfred's always great, but like...
Alfred had a really dominant role in this. It was it was not bad, but it was very weird.
They really changed the dynamic where Alfred is like a father figure to Bruce.
Which is cool. I mean, this is a super different Batman movie, as though that wasn't obvious enough.
Right.
But I mean, it comes at the characters you know from completely different angles. Like, for example, for what little Catwoman is in it, she's never remotely referred to as a love interest at all. And there's this weird kind of, like, could be a love interest, but never, ever comes even close between Batman and Barbara.
Yeah, he kept on, like, every time he would gaze at her in the beginning, he'd get all starry-eyed, and they'd play, I can't remember
Cutting
what song.
Crew.
Yeah, Cutting Crew. Yeah, and clearly he had the hots for her, but then after a while, it just stops. Like, he just stopped getting that. He would, like, trip over himself whenever he was around her. This is uber-cool Batman, but he sees Barbara Gordon, and he, like, never met her before, never knew she existed, apparently, and just, every time he sees her, he's like, and then he can't really keep his cool, and then after like the third time it happens, it's just normal. Like, it never comes up again.
Yeah, there's a lot of like seemingly dropped threads with her.
Yeah, and like then, a lot of half completed ideas.
Yeah, and like, and he's like, oh yeah, at the end, you know, because you've seen the poster, you've seen the pictures. She's there as Batgirl.
Yeah,
she wasn't Batgirl when she starts. Batgirl is a thing that happens throughout the course of the film.
Yeah,
and he's like, oh, you can be Batgirl, and she's like, all right, if I call you Batboy, but never goes past that. Like, she. Does she, is that a moniker that she has? Why not Batwoman? Batwoman is a character and they have changed everything already. I don't know. So it's just, that's not really any kind of a grand statement there. It's just an example of how it's a fun, wacky movie about toys, not to be taken too seriously, but as far as like having a little bit more gravity, more like what the Lego movie had. Not the Lego movie had its particularly strong message, and not that
this was a lighter fare compared to the Lego movie, and not that the Lego movie was heavy at all.
Yeah, but imagine that. Yeah. Imagine the dials turned down a little bit more.
Yeah.
An interesting thing about the press screening we saw is that usually when they do these screenings, they put their best foot forward. They do the thing that they think is going to be the most impactful in terms of how it's being viewed. It was a 2D screening.
Mm-hmm.
When they showed us Lego Movie before, it was the 3D screening, and the 3D was incredible then. So I can't tell you how the 3D was.
Because I felt like toys. I felt like you were like, oh, I can, that's almost tactile information almost. You know, little scratches and imperfections in each of the toys and stuff.
I actually felt like knowing what it was like in the first film, I felt like I was missing out seeing it in 2D.
A little bit,
this
maybe.
Time around. Like, because there's so much... There's so much detail in the Lego films because the way it's animated, that everything is like a unique structure, and that level of detail I haven't seen the Lego movie since I saw it in theaters. So seeing this one, I actually felt like I was losing a part of it. Like some of the complexity of the animation was absolutely lost on me in the 2D format. which is interesting. The director is actually no stranger to stop motion, which is interesting since, you know, that's the look of the Lego films, though they're not the reality of the Lego films.
And also no stranger to stop motion DC parodies.
True. It's Chris McKay of Robot Chicken and Moral Oral fame. An interesting choice, and this is his first feature film. So
it really, when you put it like that, it really does feel like a bunch of Robot Chicken sketches strung together. It's like, oh, there's a couple things that happen a couple times, but then they never show up again. You know, oh, and then there's a scene, there's a whole sequence of this. Like, there's a lot of great sequences.
Yeah. The movie, I'd say overall, it's fine with moments of greatness.
Yeah.
And one of the things that is very fine and should have been a lot better, because it's a major part, is the Joker. I feel.
Yeah.
He's voiced by Zach Galifianakis, who I think is great.
Did a good job.
I don't think he did do a good job.
I think he did a good job, but the material, it just wasn't quite... It didn't feel like the Joker. Like, this should have been another villain. The only reason it's the Joker is because it has to be... He's got to be Batman's number one main villain, but he didn't act like the Joker. Like, he just was like... I don't know. It was such a new take.
Average Joe kind of voice.
Yeah.
There was like, you know, even his like zany laugh wasn't particularly zany. He felt like
they gave him jagged teeth, sharp teeth and stuff. And
yeah. He had a very crazy look, and the sounds coming out of his mouth did not match that at all. And it was the weakest Joker performance maybe ever.
I don't know what else
to
compare.
And granted, there's been a lot of great Joker performances. How is Zach Galifianakis going to stack up to Heath Ledger, Jack Nicholson, and what's his face from the 1960s series?
Cesar Romero. Or even John DiMaggio in Under the Red Hood.
True.
A pretty cool Joker as well.
But he could. This was a great opportunity to pull that Cesar Romero in. Because that guy had a very, like.
Yeah. But they were going for a different. In a strange twist, they wanted the Joker to be sympathetic, and for most of that audience, he was sympathetic. Audience is going, "Oh," and I'm like, "Shut the fuck up!" I'm like, "This is the Joker. He would murder somebody, but not in this universe. In this universe, he doesn't want to murder anybody."
I mean, it's fine because you know this universe, different rules. We can check our expectations at the door.
Yeah,
but it just, man, it just wasn't great. Like they pulled in so much talent for bit characters with hardly no lines. They had Jemaine Clement play Sauron. They had Ralph Fiennes, you know, playing Alfred, but not playing Voldemort.
Yeah, Eddie Izzard played Voldemort.
And why wasn't Eddie Izzard the Joker?
That would have been amazing.
There you go.
Oh, he would have been. A bit, but that, you know, again, they're going for a different take. He behaves differently.
Conan O'Brien played Edward Nygma. He killed it.
He played Edward Nygma
for the handful of lines that the Riddler had.
I think he just sort of grunted. He don't even know if he made a line. Did he say anything?
He had some real lines. He had some real lines, and I thought that's a cool voice. Who was that?
He should have played the Flaming Sea just as a cameo.
And Billy Dee Williams. I was so excited about Billy Dee Williams being in this movie, reprising his role as Two-Face, he was, you know, Harvey Dent in Batman and Batman Returns, never got to be Two-Face, and he's actually kind of prominently featured on the poster. Couple lines.
Yeah, just a couple lines.
And a bunch of Walla in the background stuff.
He may have said more lines in the Lego movie as Lando than he has in this.
Oh, absolutely. Without question. It's such a shame.
Yeah.
I think we got to wait, Cap, for the director's cut. Because when the director's cut comes out, it'll be a little more edgy. We'll get more Two-Face.
Well, that is the Warner Brothers like treatment now.
Yeah, modus operandi.
Yeah. there was a weird choral British child orphan song during the credits that had this distinct vibe about it of, oh, they recorded this for a scene that didn't get made.
Yeah, like when little Dick Grayson in the orphanage sees the Batmobile drive by, would start singing maybe. I don't know.
It was just short enough to have been like a scene.
Yeah. Wouldn't be surprised.
So I suppose, you know, Doug and I, we saw the film and now we're recording this. We did not choreograph our points. This is very raw, as you can tell by how all over the place this discussion is.
Well, the movie is a little all over the place, too. But
yeah.
But because it's so light and because it's just trying to have a fun time, you know, I'd say it succeeds. It was entertaining. I would, you know, if you had any interest, you'll probably like it. But if you don't like Batman and you don't like toys, then I mean, better spend your money elsewhere.
What, I suppose, if I'd paid money to see it, I might have thought, because tickets are so fucking expensive these days, I might have thought that could have genuinely been better.
Mm-hmm.
But the first 10 minutes, can't stress enough, they're golden.
Yeah, you get the full bang for your buck, like for that, whereas it's sort of law of diminishing returns as the longer the movie goes on.
And you know, Batman was such a better supporting character in the Lego movie than he was the focus of a feature.
Hmm.
I think
like how they did with Jack Sparrow and all the other Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Yeah. He just didn't carry it well enough. And the problem is that he's a character who's a great side character, and then they gave him side characters, and it's just diminishing returns all across the board. Like, nothing was quite as strong as it could have been, because there was a lot of potential, and it's not a frustratingly untapped potential like in many films these days.
Like many DC films.
Like, yes. But it was good, and here's where you might tune out and decide that you don't care about my opinions anymore. There's a thing that happened to me in the first Lego film, and it happened to me again in this film, and that's where I question the nature of our pop culture reality that we live in the 21st century. I see these films and there's such massive explosions of properties and characters and marketing and all that. And there's lots of genuine artistry poured into them and actual, like, you know, love for the original material. I mean, we're nerds. This is Nerdy Show. We bury nuanced references to shit in our own stuff that we create, and we love and appreciate that. But also, we don't appreciate, you know, incredible amounts of pandering, which this film actively didn't have in many cases. It had, you know, some. Of course it had some.
It had a peppering of pandering.
Yeah, but most of the references and so on was really genuine. That was part of the experience of, like, this movie is a send-up to many facets of all the Batmans that have come before in cinema history. So that makes it appropriate. But there's a degree of the cross franchise interaction and so on with it being...
I kept thinking of Lego Dimensions, the video game.
Yeah. It feels like a huge commercial, and it is, but it also isn't. And maybe I put too much thought into it, but I always leave feeling just a little bit bothered. Like, what does, you know...
What does it bode for the future?
Yeah, what does it all mean? Like, it's an interesting thing that's happened, but like...
It's not like Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
No, it's not.
You know, where you have all these different characters showing up for cameos and it kind of tries to push the story along. Here it's just sort of like, oh, it'd be really cool if we just had this. Now I get the idea that Lego is, you're supposed to mix it up. You know, you can buy the different Lego sets and you can have characters from all over, you know, just like with the video game. That's what it's all about. You build your own version of it, and you can make things and make things that otherwise wouldn't happen in reality. You couldn't make an actual Batman movie and have any of those extra characters show up in it. And this you could.
Yeah, exactly. Like, because no, it would be like, it has to be this much of a cartoon, because having that amount like of deluge of pop culture would be otherwise unacceptable, which is why these movies are cool, because they make the unacceptable possible.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it has both sides of the argument on it. It has all the reasons that it's cool, and then in the back of my mind, I'm always just a little bit bothered by it.
Because there's so much extra stuff in it, you don't really get the time for a normal film. But again, it's a Lego movie. I didn't go in here expecting, like, oh, this is going to be like a Batman movie.
No.
That's totally gonna, you know.
And I hope no one did. That would be a mistake.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, it's like, you know, what were your expectations going in?
They were about what it was. This is me, once again, I'm sure I've had a similar conversation before on the show, like trying to put into words a feeling, a sensation that I just can't quite put my finger on, of just something being off about it. From a marketing perspective, from a culture perspective, it is raw, undiluted pop culture marketing.
Recycled,
like everything. That is what it is. And it never tried to be something else, though the first film was mysteriously quality in spite of that. But it has this little odor that comes with it. This is a genuine film. They're both genuine films. They're very genuine.
The first Lego movie, the main character, Emmett, Chris Pratt, he was the boring guy in a fantastic world where all this crazy stuff happens, and all these Superman, Batman, Ninja Turtles, Charles Barkley, like all these other, you know, characters pop up. But the main hero is a nobody who has no personality whatsoever. So that's kind of the point. That's an interesting story to frame, you know?
Yeah.
With Batman, he's already, like, amazing at everything he does, and he always succeeds. and the inside is like, his inside is like hollow. It's like, oh, he's got no, he pushes everyone away. I'm like, okay, that's an interesting way to go for a Batman story, but ultimately this is an excuse to get him to go on a crazy adventure and see all these different characters and throw all these characters in there and make it like, oh, we're all like a family kind of thing.
These sensations that I have that I'm trying to, and failing, I feel, to put into words, they are perhaps inappropriate to this conversation. I mean, the film evoked these sensations. However, it's a Lego Batman movie. It's how could it be anything different? Right. I just hope there doesn't come a point where most major motion pictures are versions of the Lego Batman movie.
Well, the Marvel movies kind of already are. Like, they're throwing in all these characters and references, but they do it in a way. The Lego Batman movie is like, they'll throw a character in and you laugh, not because, oh, I like that miscellaneous 80s character. Seeing him there makes me laugh because it pandered to me. That's a thing I recognize. It's usually played for a joke or some kind of pun, and it's funny and you laugh. Whereas in like the Batman vs. Superman movie, Flash shows up on screen and people are like, oh, that's Flash, oh my God. Like, it's trying to get the hype machine going. So I feel like there's a different goal with these kinds of films, yeah. You know? And I feel like with Lego, at least so far with this, it's more of like, hey, it's just for fun. It's just for a gag. You know, let's just laugh and like just kind of forget about your problems for a while. But whereas in like Batman vs. Superman or Man of Steel, it's all meant to be like this epic, like, whoa, it's all going to tie together. And oh my gosh, it's an epic, huge story and emotions and everything running through it. But it's just forced. It's very forced.
Yeah.
This was more like,
I mean, it is like, that's what I'm trying to, it's weird. Like, I knew that there was a possibility that I shouldn't even start this conversation to try to personify these feelings. Yeah, but like candy, too much of it's not good for you.
Yeah, I'd agree.
So I don't know what this means for the future, for pop culture, for anything, but it is delicious candy.
It's like you have a huge bowl of Halloween candy and the first thing you eat, the first 10 minutes, is like your favorite candy.
Yeah.
And then you're like, all right, I got the rest of this candy. Still good. Just not my favorite. I ate my favorite.
Yeah. Okay. That is a perfect analogy. And it actually aptly describes the way I feel about this film. Is that having watched all of it, I kind of just felt tired at the end of it. Like it was fine. It was totally fine. But it had a sort of a diminishing value over time. It stopped being as novel, though it still had like, you know, great laugh out loud moments peppered throughout. And ultimately, it's not necessarily for me. They are in large part all ages films, but they are at their heart meant to be for a certain audience, which is why, you know, nobody dies and they don't even say hell or damn.
Or kill.
Yeah. I mean, and they're very, that's a joke that they're very aware of throughout the entire thing.
The one thing that was kind of funny was, it was funny when they first did it, but then afterwards you don't even think about it. Every time a gun goes off, they go pew pew instead of a gunshot. Yeah. So the sound effect of guns going off is just a person going pew, 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 pew. So it's like every missile, every bomb, everything is all done with like a person just making a pew, pew sound, which is funny. And it was hilarious in the opening sequence when it happened. All these cops, like these, you know, Joker and his goons are, you know, blasting through a cop barricade and all the cops go, oh, there he goes, pew, 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 pew. And there's all these gunshots are popping off all over the place. But then by the end of the film, it's more pew, pew, pew. And you're like, okay, it's kind of not funny. It's not annoying. It's not bad. It's just
maybe a little annoying.
But the joke was already up. Like, that was the joke. What the joke was, a surprise that they say pew pew instead of bang bang, and the fact that it's still going on was just like it wasn't as funny then as it was in the beginning.
Yeah.
But that's kind of like this whole movie.
Well, you know, we got to it in a roundabout way, but I think we did get to something in regards to the movie. But if you love Batman, you're gonna see some shit that you haven't seen in a long time in it. You're gonna see some nods to some stuff that you love. And
if you're at all been if you've been depressed with the way Batman's been treated recently in the latest incarnations, and that even includes if you're unhappy with the Christopher Nolan version, then you'll have a good laugh. This is refreshing.
It's a funky and fun send up to the legacy of Batman.
Yeah,
and is really more cut from the same cloth as the Adam West material than anything else, in a weird roundabout way. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that is what it is. This has been a adult's review
of a child's film about toys.
So thanks so much for listening to this review. If you got thoughts and feelings on everything we've said here, especially my complicated ramblings, feel free to let us know either on the Nerdy Show forums, comment on this episode's page, or on SoundCloud for that matter. shoot us back a message in Twitter, whatever works for you. Thank you so much for listening to Nerdy Show, for supporting us. You can head over to nerdyshow.com/support, where you can find out how to give us a one-time donation, join our Patreon, or shop via our Amazon links and buy all kinds of Batman or Lego movie or Lego in general affiliated merchandise, whatever floats your boat.
Your bat boat.
Your bat boat. And hey, let me just say, the Scuttler was fucking rad.
It was fun.
Yeah.
It didn't make a whole lot of sense, but it was fun.
No, it didn't make a whole lot of sense in exactly the way that a movie like Lego Movie should exist, because a giant vehicle that is basically like a massive bat and moves like one across the ground and across surfaces, it could never make sense or exist in any other medium than something as ridiculous as this. And for that, that is a beautiful thing.
They had the guts. They went there.
Yep. Taking us out, we have a track called Batman by the band Spoiler Alert, a one-off group formed in 2010 by the front person of the band Art Brute.
Bye, I'm Doug.
Bye, I'm Cap.
Up a tall building, hiding in the shadows, so I can keep an eye on the street below. Alfred says I have trouble with intimacy, but people often die when they get close to me. I'm kicking and punching. They're recently released from Arkham Asylum. I'd better keep an eye on them. That place is pretty bad at rehabilitating people. If anything, they come out even more evil. No one ever hears me coming, so I'll go and thwart a couple of muggings. And after that, I'll go and stop some heroin smuggling down at the docks. Punching and kicking all of the criminals, the crime on the street. I wanna get rid of them. Swing, punch, smack, another cunning sneak attack. Pow, smash, kick, another junkie. Scum. Crash! Wallop! Bang! Destroyed another low-life gang. I'm kicking and punching all of the criminals. Crying on the street. I wanna get rid of all. And I'm Dick Grayson at the moment.
Doug, how many Batman Pez containers would you give this film?
Well, for what it is, I'd give it 7 out of 10 Batman Pez dispensers. For what it is. For film as an art, like I would give it, you know, I'd give it a solid 3 out of 5. But for like a cartoon toy Batman Lego film, yeah, 7 out of 10.
Now, are these Pez dispensers, like, do they have candy in them, or are they like from a flea market?
The 7 out of the 10 are full of candy. Uh-huh. The others aren't, and you don't know which one's which. Some of them filled with candy, some of them ain't. Just like sequences of this film. Some of them are great. Some of them are an empty Pez dispenser where it's fun to look at, and it is a toy, you can play with it, but unless it has the candy in it, it's missing the point. Maybe like just like that metaphor.